This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Harahan to Grealish.
Harahan! Oh, yes! That wonder left foot does the trick again for Conor Harahan in Aston Villa.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show, nominated for Best Club Podcast in the Football Supporters Association Awards 2019. Joining me, it's not a celebratory show, or is it, gentlemen? Are you celebrating this?
Yeah.
Is it a W?
Yeah.
It's always a W. I mean, I don't get out of bed for anything less, and I've been chipped out of the permafrost in Norway to arrive here specially.
Yes, welcome Mr. Dan Rogers, who I'm sure will tell us the real story behind his Norwegian trip. We obviously got Chris down the line from Norway. Well, he's actually in Copenhagen when we spoke to him. Also joining me, Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
And he was a mom's patron answering a cry for help on the last episode. Just came out of nowhere, two hours notice. Did a good job. Back in the seat again. Ben Redding, welcome again.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
Dan, what happened? What was this real story? Because Chris was crying about that we'd got him into some trouble and never really explained it to me. I couldn't work out what he was getting his knickers in a twist for.
Well, what happened was that we had a lovely, peaceful, uneventful evening and we had some dinner and we ended up at the high fixture that was Norway versus the Faroe Islands, and it turned out to be a...
Cut to the chase. We know you went to Norway and the Faroe Islands. What happened? There was pyro,
there was
videos.
There was pyro. What I stupidly did was... Well, no, what I stupidly did, I, as I always do, I took a little bit of video, I took it out, I tagged a few people in. We thought nothing of it, you know, the acrid smoke drifted away, and we took on more drink, we sat down for dinner, and a telephone rang, and...
Neuland,
drop the fucking ball again. Or something to that effect. And what happened was that basically my tweet had been picked up by Norway's equivalent of the BBC and Chris's name was tagged in it. So there was some notoriety that came off the back of that. So I had to, yeah.
It was on the news, wasn't it?
Yeah, it made the news and I think that there were a few people had noticed that, shall we say.
And his wife wasn't happy?
Nope.
No. His newfound fame wasn't, I don't think, fully appreciated in the moment.
Right, well, we spoke to Chris from Norway on the last show. This show, we are off to Dubai.
Warmer climates.
To speak to Ryan from the Dubai Lions to see how they're getting on. They are celebrating their 5th year anniversary. Coming up also in the show, we discuss Mr. Jack Grealish. Is he just hype? Should he be in the England team? What's the story? Also, we'll have a quick Villa dump to bring us up to speed with Newcastle in 60 seconds. 3 points include facial recognition. Is it trying to be forced into the Premier League on the sly? Standing at games also seems to be on the horizon. Finally, I mean, I'm talking about standing legally. Also, there's the bizarre case of J. Lloyd Samuel. Very bizarre.
Yeah.
We'll get onto that shortly. Steve Bruce's downfall at Villa Park.
No.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! the ins and outs of the Newcastle game, and also a three-way Scott Hogan touch count. Before we turn over to Mr. Chris Budd, just quickly, this show will be sponsored by Beer 52. If you are not one of the many people who have already taken advantage of the offer, which is essentially a free crate, it's actually a box of 10 top IPAs, craft beers delivered to your door the next day. All you have to do is pay the postage, £4.95. You actually will be joining a craft beer club, which you can cancel at any time. And we've obviously sampled the goods. I think it was episode 90, wasn't it?
I'm sampling as we speak.
And you can join, you can either just have all light beers, or you can have a mixture of darks and lights, where obviously you have access to stouts and porters, but it is well worth joining up. It's actually a no-brainer for like £4.95. It's coming up to Christmas, 10 decent beers, get on it. Just go to www.beer52.com/moms, but the link will be in the show notes. Mr. Budd, tell us about that Newcastle game.
Am I on the countdown?
I'll count you in. 3, 2, 1.
Bruce returns to Villa Park for the first time since Cabbage Gate. Some shocking haircuts on show in the Toon Army team, by the way. They give us the ball and retreat to their own 18-yard line for 90 minutes. Target throws up everywhere. Villa have a lot of the ball, but Newcastle organise. Bruce ball is horrible to watch, reassuringly. Heaton makes a great save from a header from a corner. Horahan, great free kick. 1-0. Horahan, great free kick. 2-0. Elgazi with an easy finish. No VAR, thank you very much. Grealish runs the game. Big Wes, slightly improved. Elgazi has the ball in the net for the third. Offside. More Villa chances follow. Their keeper makes a load of great saves from Louise, Wesley and Konza. Villa could and should have killed the game. 2-0 flat as a very poor Toon side. McGinn hits the post with the last kick of the game. Probably the most routine Villa performance we've had in the Premier League this season. Sob on the Tyne. Mark 3.
Still got 5 seconds. Anything to add?
Fuck the Geordies.
Howie!
Right, then, let's get on to the 3 points. First of all, a bit of a kind of conspiracy feel to this one. We mentioned this on the, I think it was episode take one of 91 that only went out to the patrons. But we discussed facial recognition. At that time, it was because it had been tried at Swansea-Cardiff Welsh Derby. Since then, something's come up. That Swansea game, I think, was challenged. The use of facial recognition was challenged in that game. But Lord Justice Hayden Cave, sitting with Mr. Justice Swift, concluded that South Wales' use of live facial recognition met the requirements of the Human Rights Act. So this company, Super Recognizers, selling facial recognition technology, has jumped on this, and they've said, I don't know if this is an internal memo or a message from them, but it says, we are already at clubs, including Premier League, doing facial recognition trials, and they are starting to buy into it, but this will now only fly forward now due to the court result. So there's several of these companies. I mean, initially, I think it was the Sunday Times broke in August that Manchester City were trialing facial recognition for like having a fast lane to go in. So you could go, it's like the priority queue for Ryanair or wherever.
There's no such thing as a priority queue for Ryanair.
It's bullshit.
Everyone queues for the priority.
Yeah, I went to Madrid. One of the legs was priority, and you get there and pretty much 75% are on the priority queue.
You bought a bag.
Because it's the only fucking way you can get a bag on. It's how they get you. But anyway, so there was this conspiracy that Manchester City would be trialing this technology, basically to have a one lane, super fast lane, where you, if you signed up to it, facial recognition, you could go straight in. So there again, they're trying to sell surveillance to you as a benefit. Now, this apparently never happened. I think the company was called Blink. So on the upshot of this Football Supporters Association, we've been talking about this, trying to find out what Premier League clubs are actually involved here. So far, in terms of like Newcastle, Manchester United, even Villa and Manchester City have all denied that they are trialing this. So we don't know if this is basically a Super Recognizers playing a poker hand of bluff and basically saying, oh yes, Premier League clubs are trialing it, so that to basically FOMO it for other clubs to actually join in.
No, I think what we're seeing is a normalization of something into like the civilian world that's completely irrelevant. You know, we're talking about a military grade technology that's used.
Yeah,
you know, it's used, it's real world deployment at the moment, I think, is in the US airport system and in a very, very limited scale. And why do they need to photograph and take my face if I'm coming into a football game? I don't buy any of this under the guise of getting you into
fashion.
That's bullshit.
I was going to say, it's fairly quick now with a season card, isn't it?
It's instant. You tap your card and it's loaded. You know, it's exactly, like an Oyster equivalent. And my argument, I know that a lot of people wouldn't have heard what we said on episode 91, but my argument is that this is dangerous creep, and I think that it's irrelevant. It's not necessary. It's a dangerous precedent, and I think it's been proven already. I think King's Cross Station misused the data. They lost all the data of the people.
Because people do the argument, well, if you got if you haven't done anything wrong, you've got nothing to worry about. But I've read 1984 by Orwell a few times, and when you read it as a kid a few decades ago, you think, yeah, this is going to happen.
It's a commentary now.
Now it's well, it's already happening, and people are just walking into it blindly.
Yeah, I'm
almost
not,
stupidly.
I'm not feeling this at all, especially, you know, where do you draw the line? How old are you going to be to have your face scanned? Are we talking young kids with season tickets to get in the ground here, or is it going to be adults? What's the criteria for it?
Yeah, well, as I say, it's just the latest normalisation of big data, where you get yourself into a situation of what are they collecting and collating this for? Is this really a crime prevention thing, or is that actually a monitoring tool to eke out every last penny and actually know everything about your lives down to the last detail?
Well, how many CCTV cameras have they got at a football stadium now? They're everywhere.
Exactly. And they know who everyone is, don't they?
Exactly. Why do you need facial recognition? It's just going too far.
Just kind of a hypothetical thing, maybe on a silly note, but it's kind of poignant. When you watch these like Terminator films, where they get to the point where artificial intelligence is in control of things, and they say,
I wish artificial intelligence was in control of Wesley.
But they get to the point where to improve things, artificial intelligence works it out, and they say, oh, we must get rid of human beings. They are the people that are...
I fucking agree. They should exterminate us. Have you seen what we've done to this world? We've got turtles choking on 2010-11 Aston Villa season cards in the middle of the Pacific.
So suddenly, artificial intelligence delivers the instruction, and they know everything about everybody because the data is there. People have been collecting data on Facebook so they can actually predict and manipulate you, as they did in not only in America in the Trump general election, but also obviously the Brexit vote. But before that, they were testing this on, well, let's say smaller elections across the world. They were using it. They were testing, could they make a certain election base or a certain candidate's base apathetic so they wouldn't go and vote? And they proved they could do.
They must have tested it on Aston Villa's fan base.
I've just had an epiphany, actually. I know why they're bringing this in. It's to stop people in the away scheme selling the tickets on. When they get to the ground, we've got your face. That's not you. Fuck off.
There's no one here. It puts new meaning to the phrase, same old faces.
Yeah. Scrap that. I'm all in for this.
But yeah, it's as you probably guess, there's going to be a lot of people against this, and hopefully the Premier League football clubs do not take it upon themselves to start introducing this and testing it. And companies like, you know, Super Recognizers and Blink, whoever they are, can do one.
I'll just start producing Ian Dowie latex masks.
Can you do me a Nigel Spink chin?
If I knew Aston Villa had facial recognition, I would be wearing a mask to every game.
Wear my Keith Wyness bodysuit. just the tie.
Point number two, as all the election manifestos came out, each and every one of them mentioned something on standing, or safe standing, as they called it. And pretty much everybody, even the Tories, said it was going to... They were all in favour of it. So it seems that the wheels are in motion. I mean, the government are currently doing a research project, for want of a better term, on the state of standing. And once they crunch the data, things should be happening quick. But to actually admit in a manifesto that they're for it is a strong indication that the year 2020 should see faster progress, shall we say, on that issue. Issue number three.
This is my favourite issue.
It's just downright bizarre.
It's just bizarre, isn't it? Is the J. Lloyd Samuel story, which I'm sure you'd have heard about. I mean, first of all, there was a story about, has he faked his death? And then there was a story about, well...
Did he fake his career?
Did he fake his career? But, I mean, you gentlemen, have a better grasp on this situation than me. So where do you start and what do you think of it?
It is bizarre. like Chris said, on the face of it.
Or just yeah. explain the basics.
So the basics are that apparently his car burst into flames on, well, after he dropped his kids at school. And now one of his family members is claiming that he's still alive and that it's all trying to be covered up, and that there was DNA that wasn't provided at the time. Cause
they wouldn't allow access, would they?
Yeah, they were saying the body was too badly burned. So yeah,
it's a bizarre one.
Very.
Yeah, his sister believes the death was faked for an insurance scam. You know, his family were told the coroners that they wanted to conduct an independent DNA test on the remains.
Is there any resolution on this story then, or is it still open?
I think this is going to be ongoing for a while.
Yeah, it's going to run. I think.
He died in May 2018, so it's already kind of been going on a reasonable amount of time.
Obviously, we've only just finally had some closure on Dalian Atkinson's death. Another Villa player with not a very straightforward situation. Obviously, a tragic event when it happened, and it just prolongs the agony. Before we crack on, just a quick shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much again for supporting the show and staying as a patron to support true independence. And we like to try to deliver something that's not just generic and, the same old in terms of fan content. Before we go on, I just want to say a big thanks to the people who have signed up this week. Ryan Brewster, Alex Taylor, Sheldon Palmer as well. And also apologies to James Tozza. I think it's Tozza. Last week when I read your name out, my keyboard's dead. And so it either doesn't produce eyes or it just randomly produces eyes. So there was about 3 or 4 eyes at the end of your name. So a shout out to you. Thank you very much for being a patron. Please do consider being a patron. You will get access to bonus shows, including the anti-preview, and also access to various rewards and heads up. Oh, also, one more thing. It's Black Friday, as you will know, where obviously people try to sell the shit out of stuff, but it is coming up to Christmas, and there are, go to the My Old Man Said shop page, where I will keep you updated with codes to make sure you can get discounts off things like Villa merch. And also, Luke, I have a quite a sexy code for you now in play, so check that out. Right, Newcastle. So the Newcastle game, it broke a barren spell. Although, were we expected to get points from Manchester City, Liverpool and Wolves away? Maybe not. If we'd got one, we'd have been happy with that. We needed really to get something from this Newcastle game, preferably a win, considering where we were in the table and also the fixtures that were coming up. I mean, going into this game, this was 12 league games without a win against the Toon Army, which is a shocker, really.
I'm surprised they didn't rename a stand after us. I mean, that would actually be something for them to celebrate.
When you consider that Newcastle have also been up and down in the Championship and we haven't beaten them in 12 league games, and I think the last time was under Gerard Houllier with a James Collins goal at 1-0. And, this is a team that historically in recent years, recent decades, we've always struggled against, probably from Kevin Keegan onwards. And this was only our 9th win in 23 games. Although apparently Newcastle United, I read this earlier on today, they have a bit of a Monday night curse because their last 14 Monday night games have all been away from home.
I'd insist that they play at Brighton for every single one of those. Southampton next. Oh, shit.
Oh, Bournemouth away on a Monday night. Oh, fuck. So I think somebody's obviously on the wind-up with the Geordies there for sure.
Good.
Going into this game, team selection, finally Jack Grealish was back after all these, were they poker-faced Dean Smith press conferences where he pretended he was coming back?
Or? I think they were just cautious, weren't they?
It does seem a bit of a...
Well, he wasn't cautious because he was quite effervescent about Grealish being back and looked likely to play.
It just seems a bit of a recurring theme, doesn't it? Whenever he gets injured, they seem very reluctant to give us the full details on the injury. I don't know if that's through fear of...
It's always a sign that it's worse than it is. Grealish doesn't get one of these. He doesn't just get the flu, does he? He's just got a little knock and it's a month.
Yeah, you always feel as if you're not quite getting the full story when he gets injured.
Yeah, I always remember Ashley Young would go down. It looked like oh shit, he's out for 6 months. But he'd always get up. And then after watching him a few times, you thought, well,
he'd be doing that Tyson Fury, wouldn't he? Where you think,
injure him.
Resurrection.
But Grealish is like, when he's out, it's like, oh yeah, he's out for a couple of games, but actually he stays out for months and months and months. But luckily this time he was back. Also, Heaton was back after the last show where we were kind of building out of sandbags our bomb shelter with the prospect of
Orion Nieland playing.
Being in for a few weeks. So luckily we've dodged that bullet.
Hello to all of the people who responded positively to me posting Nieland conceding the goal against Malta as well, which
with the oops.
All I said was whoops, and thank you for your virtue signalling angry replies.
Yeah, and I used to get that, where you would just say oops, or something was not actually making an opinion on something, and that could be any player, where the ball goes through their legs. You know, you're just saying oops, it's like a...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I won't reveal that one of the Villa Underground sent me the video. I was being accused of watching obscure Norwegian football, obviously having hadn't physically been out to that godforsaken part of the world. Sorry, Chris. The previous week. Yeah, so that was an interesting evening. A special shout out to Sean Teal for sharing his views on my on that as well.
Well, what did he say?
Something about not poor goalkeeping, just poor tweeting. Yes.
I mean, that's the Twitter default setting, isn't it? If you don't like something, just drop the nonce in there.
Well, you know, what I like to say is that, you know, he's such a fantastic goalkeeper who we trust after his opportunity to get into the team that he was immediately dropped when Heaton...
On one leg
crawled onto the pitch.
Anyway, let's
I love him. I love all Orion Nieland. I love Norway. I love you too, Sean Teal.
Let's move on. The only other probably they weren't eye-openers. They were more like thank gods. And the only other decision was Mr. Nakamba was on the bench. First of all, Horahan was promoted. And obviously, Douglas Luiz was chosen over Nakamba. I can see, I mean, as you know, Dean Smith explained it, which is not exactly rocket science. He expected to have more of the ball against the Steve Bruce team. So it makes perfect logic to have Horahan on the pitch. Were you surprised that it wasn't... alongside Nakamba, and it was Louise that played?
No.
Nah, not really.
I mean, I heard rumours that Nakamba just got stuck in the queues for Dignitas Dining Club outside. So
you stood next to me waiting for a waffle.
For a waffle. Yeah, no. I love you too, Digbeth Dining Club. it was a reflection of how popular you are. That's what we're saying.
So, Digbeth Dining Club, which I always promote. And when I have friends from out of town, I always, well, out of the country, never mind.
It's a great place. It's a cool place.
I always take them to the Digbeth Dining Club because it stands up to anything on offer around the world. But what was your experience? You took a waffle there, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a waffle. It was my son who had it, actually. And we had a bit of an incident. We'll say no more. It took a while.
didn't Matt Target have one as well?
Yeah, Matt Target definitely did.
So yeah, Matt Target had a waffle before the game.
Yeah, definitely.
Ben's son did as well.
Yeah. So I think it's a really good idea, but yeah, I think it just doesn't
20,000
lend
people.
Itself to that many people.
So people went for it though. Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Didn't
big
they?
Time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't get near the was it Buda Belly, wasn't it? The queue was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think a little bit about the situation where they'd actually placed it in that narrow gap where the Trinity edges round to the north stand. And what I don't get is that they've closed the whole of the Trinity Road off, all that space along there. No one thought to line them up along there. They could have had an absolute free-for-all.
Yeah,
you
but
could
I think
line
that,
it all and just back it onto Aston Park.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a road that you've got to open up and rather swiftly, so you can't just kind of... You've got to take
bollocks. Fill it with food and hot dogs.
Yeah, one thing I'd noticed actually coming back to the... Holton from there, where I sit, it was. I know people had mentioned it. I think it was after the Liverpool game. So many turnstiles were shut under the Trinity Road. The queues to get into the ground. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
That has been ever since the cabbage got thrown at Bruce. They've put a new, because I was sitting the Trinity, they've put a new barrier to get searched down before you go in the game.
Vegetable search. Yeah. So,
it's a vegetable amnesty. Yeah.
No carrots, no potatoes.
Vegetable amnesty.
Can you take my avocado, please?
Yeah. That's the priority queue. If you've got no vegetables, you get straight in.
Right, anyway, let's get on to the game. early stages, it was looking like we were rocking and rolling quite early on. I mean, yeah. Target was getting into some good positions, and quickly we realised this was no Kevin Keegan's Newcastle, because they weren't offering anything. And
what did Bruce call it? Passive. That's a very polite way of putting part of the bus.
I mean, their
it?
Forward line, it's all 80s hairdos and bandanas, and it was shambolic at times.
I think that genuine, and this has got nothing to do with my pure loathing for Steve Bruce, draconian, insipid, horrid style of football. Newcastle were absolutely dreadful. They lacked any...
Woeful.
Absolutely dreadful, and they couldn't do anything across the park, and the three guys they've managed to assemble at the front top of that top end of the pitch...
Expensively.
Is well, when you go, when you look at the bench, you go, I know who I'll bring on. I'll bring an absolute cart horse on in the form of Andy Carroll. And Pete, and the Newcastle fans are clapping their hands. Yes, bring him on. Bring
all
on.
Right, poor Andy.
Bring on the heap of steaming shit. You know, that's when I thought, yeah, the game is won.
It's one of them that when it was a reminder of like a thing that you forget of when Bruce was our manager, that shit, we're losing 2-0. What shall I do? I know, I'll put another striker on and take a defender off. Yeah. Let's get as many strikers on as we can, because that'll work. It was just so dated.
It was so predictable. It was classic Bruce. You couldn't actually, they had no game plan. You couldn't see what they were trying to do. And don't want to say that Villa... Against a better team, Villa, I think, would have had a much, much sterner test. And I don't think we can really use the Newcastle game as too much of a measure. But we did a professional job without having to break a sweat, I didn't think.
Yeah, I mean, straight away, Grealish was carrying the ball well and running the show. Nice dummy.
He was superb.
Nice dummy for, I think it was just after 10 minutes when Target put a great ball in. I think El Ghazi, if he gambles a bit more, he would have got on the end of that one. I mean, El Ghazi, as you saw when he scored, I think he's paranoid about being offside.
Yeah, VAR again.
That's probably why he hung on on that first chance he had. Also, there was a Douglas Luiz Ripper.
Douglas Luiz Ripper's got a name to it, a ring to it, hasn't it?
From another Grealish layoff. So straight away, is Grealish pulling the strings. This is before we even scored. The thing about Douglas Luiz now, every time he's hovering outside the 18-yard box and the ball comes to him, the Holt then goes, shoot!
He's like De Hammer, isn't he?
Is this helping him in any way? Because when he scored those two goals, there wasn't that build-up. Now it's like he's like,
and I think as well, when you see, because he did get dispossessed a couple of times by dallying on the ball.
He's quite casual, yeah.
Well, it's as though he's playing in flip-flops, isn't it, sometimes, that he's that casual. I know, but I do think that given a couple of seconds thought, so a couple of his more spectacular goals, he's had a couple of seconds to think, and
he's got a hell of a shot on him.
Unbelievable.
I mean, the keeper made a great save from him, didn't he? In fact, if anything, he was their best player all night.
Yeah.
Which speaks for itself.
It does, yeah.
Surprised.
I mean, on the first goal, I mean, obviously Grealish drew the fouls for both of those free kicks that led to the goals. When those four, there was a haggle.
Hurdle.
Of four Villa players around the ball, you had Luiz, El Ghazi, Hourihan and Grealish. I thought that it was set up for a right footer. And that's obviously the goalkeeper thought. And I thought, well, Luiz might have a pop at this. Although, does Luiz prefer the ball to be rolling when he hits it? And then obviously Grealish seemed to be pulling the strings there, waved the other two away. And it was a beautiful free kick. Simplicity, really.
Yeah, just a little shift. Took the ball out of it and whipped it round. It was kind of, having seen Hourihan do it numerous times before, it was almost inevitable.
It was like a carbon copy of the goal he scored against Blackburn last season, wasn't it? To equalise, it was absolutely perfect.
How far we've travelled since goodness.
The second goal, obviously, a peach of a delivery. El Ghazi, on the sixpence, point blank range. Paranoia kicked in for El Ghazi. I think he had VAR, and he had like a mental VAR before he celebrated. But that's the situation it's caused. That's what the impact of VAR is. A player can't score a goal and
it just ruins the moment.
Jump into the crowd.
I thought it looked as if all the players around him were asking, are you onside?
And he
said, I don't know.
That,
like you say, that is the epitome now of the problem that we've got. You've got players who don't feel they can celebrate through fear that it's going to be ruled out.
There'll be no Libor Kozak jumping into the Holt end anymore, will there?
There'll be no more Alan Hutton moments.
Yeah.
A year to the day, of course.
Well, I've read a stat that we've had the most free kick goals since the start of last season. I don't know where that kick came from. So obviously Hourihan has been on the end of a lot of them. What do you think about Hourihan and how he fits into this team going forward? And think about specifically December, because we have 8 games now.
A couple of things I'd say about him is that I wrote on my site that I thought that maybe we're seeing that there could be a little bit more in his development curve that we might not have expected. I always thought that he was a really, really good championship player. Obviously, he's got the set piece in his bag. He's played up the divisions. The newish bit, I suppose, is that he's now in the Irish setup. You're playing international football. It's a top standard. And the difference here is that we recruited quite well in the centre of midfield. He has to play well. He has to play consistently well.
Yeah.
And I thought he was superb against Newcastle, to be honest. My criticism of him for certain games, and this is where like your Nakambas and your Luises will rotate, I think, is that that's the natural thing for the Premier League. There will be games where Hourihane won't be suited.
So what are those games? Do you think he's more of a home... I mean, it was large. You know, we predicted at the start of the season that Nakamba and Luiz would play against Manchester City and Liverpool, etc., and then Hourihane potentially come in for the home games. I mean, Ben, do you think that's the logic
behind
Hourihane?
For me, like seeing him on Monday, I don't know if you guys think the same, but he looks to me as if he's like bulked up a bit. He looks stronger to me. I don't know if he's seen that as a weakness potentially to compete a bit more, but I think the facts of the matter are we are spoilt for riches in terms of midfield quality. At the moment, you know, we've got options in there, probably the best options we've got throughout the whole team. So we can pick and choose, and Dean Smith's in the enviable position of if someone has a good game, someone's got to earn the shirt off them.
Yeah.
That's the first time in a long time. I think Hourihane is, we've all said it on the show for the last 2 years, 3 years maybe. If we've got the ball, he's an asset. It's when you're, you know, 40% and less of possession and it's like, is he that sort of nasty physical player who can break a team down and, you know, spoil a game and then can he get you up the field? Newcastle really, without knocking him at all, it was a game that really suited him. Newcastle made the likes of Grealish and Hourihane look good. They played very well, but Newcastle were god awful. I mean, you look at someone like Shelvey in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I can't even remember him playing.
Dreadful. There are certain games that suit Hourihane. For his set piece delivery alone, you will always have him. I think at Villa Park, I would start him 9 times out of 10. Away from home, I think you're probably going to have to be a little bit more flexible.
Well, that's where you anchor one of two of either Nakamba and Estonia. And I think Hourihane's starting to prove now, whereas you maybe looked at, maybe it is a game, it depends on the game again. You're looking at the certain opposition, but you're looking at the bench where you're thinking it's what Ben was just saying about options. And for the foot, you know, Smith's been very clear that saying that across the whole team now we've got a second option. That definitely wasn't the case last season. I think the question mark's been around a number of the players in the squad this season is are those second options Premier League standard? Some players will step up, and I think our hope would be that Hourihane could be one of those players that can. And I hope, as I said at the beginning in my first point, really, that I hope there's that final development curve in him where he goes from being in 4 or 5 years a League Two player up to a Premier League international footballer.
Yeah, I think we can like interchange our midfielders out pretty much bar Grealish, I'd say. McGinn, he's not quite hit the form, but you know, I think he's another one that if he's fit, he starts. That other position is up for grabs from 3 or 4 players.
Yeah.
Speaking of Grealish, I mean, we'll talk about him in depth probably in a standalone podcast, but big difference when he came along.
Hugely. In terms of, you know, the control word that we've all used at various points in this season, and the Newcastle game was just perfect for a player like Grealish, where you know you're going to have a lot of the ball. They're going to be passive. They're not going to press you.
Yeah.
He could play and run the game in the final third. You know, he didn't have to take the ball off the back four all the time. Then when he got in the final third, he actually had options. I think not having the two wide men and actually Grealish being sort of advanced, it balanced in the midfield because Luiz could sit, Hourihane could actually play a little bit further up the field. And I think Hourihane is better in the final third than as a holder.
Yeah.
I think if you get Hourihane in the final third, he's going to make things happen. Him and Grealish combine really well. They've both got a through ball. I think Hourihane's confident in front of goal. You get him out wide, he's going to deliver the ball. In terms of our left-hand side, he's the best deliverer of a ball from that side compared to Alghazi and Trezeguet.
He's got a finish in him as well.
And he's got a finish. And you know, the other chances, you know, he made the chance for Wesley, which was a really well-constructed piece of play. It would have been a great goal. It's a shame for Wesley, you know, that he didn't take it. He should have taken it.
It's a shame for him that he didn't score, is that what you're saying? It's a shame for him he didn't score from 6 yards.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, Konsa had a free header as well, but, you know, that was straight at the...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We had chances to
we
win
could have
three
destroyed that game. Yeah. I mean, 2-0, with all due respect to the Geordies, completely flattered them.
But is this a concern? I mean, you read reviews of this game, and there's the thing that a lot of people are bringing up is both Villa goals were from set pieces, and we've spoken about being more clinical in open play, and we control this. Finally, we have like controlled possession in the game, but are we missing a trick there because we haven't got a natural finisher up top?
I think we'll be definitely getting one in January, like we've said before. There's no doubt that we need someone to take the burden off Wesley because he's not quite working for him at the moment. But in terms of like the other parts of our play and not taking chances, I think it's one of them. Would you rather us have won 3-1 or 4-1 or the 2-0 that we got and kept the clean sheet?
I mean, we haven't been doing that very often.
Exactly. Yeah. Our goal difference at the moment, we're not in a position, I don't think, where we need to go and smash teams because our goal difference is miles better than the teams below us.
We've got more clean sheets than Liverpool.
Yep, stat.
They've only got two, which is quite interesting from that point of view. What do you think of Konsa, apart from his crazy karate kick attempt at an own goal?
Assured, yeah. I think. I mean, let's be brutally honest, he wasn't tested, was he? I mean, was it Joelinton? The lad up front for them was as bad a centre forward as you're going to see in the Championship, let alone in the Premier League. The fact that he's, was it 40 million?
I think
their front three apparently was worth about 100 million, which amazing. You just, if you're one of their fans, you think this is, we're in trouble here.
Especially when they, you know, they basically heaved a manager in Benitez because they wouldn't give him any money. And then you see what they did choose to spend their money on pre-season without him.
It's crazy, isn't
You really are scratching your head. And just to say, a line on Konsa, that the other end of the spectrum, he's cost us next to nothing. No one had heard of him.
11 million.
That's nothing. That's peanuts in the modern game, David.
Yeah, I don't know.
that's two sorry, two sorry, Wesleys.
Sorry to break your flow.
I think no.
Well, that's what that's 4.5 John McGinn's.
But there's some strange Scottish exchange rate that no one really understands there. That's more friends for me. But he looks this was a club where we were high-fiving each other at the prospect of Tommy Elphick coming back, so we had one recognised centre half less than a year ago, and now we've got any combination. We're actually Konsa's ahead of House,
Hawes and Chester.
I mean, Konsa looks assured, and
I think he's one now that in the past, if we'd have got an injury at centre-half, you'd be thinking, with playing Engels and Mings like we have done, you'd be thinking, oh dear, I might be struggling. But now I'd be pretty confident if he had to play any, length of games, if anything did happen to Mings or Engels.
Yeah. I like the balance we have at centre-half. If Mings is out, he will inevitably get a suspension. You've got Courtney Hawes, natural left footer. He's the natural replacement. Yeah. Very similar type of player. You've got Konsa, who's physical, but he's good on the ball as well. Engels, tall, and you think he's going to be gangly. He's good on the ball.
How do you think Mings played?
Well, not one of his better games. He was very lax.
I mean, if you look at the grumbles from that game, I think you're looking at Luiz, sometimes a bit casual. We've seen that in every game he's played. But that, it also, it's a bit like watching John McCoon at times.
Oh, hang on a minute.
Wow.
Hang on a minute.
David's wearing one of his jumpers.
Oh, I am actually wearing a jumper, but it's not as exciting as Jean McCoon's jumpers. And also Carlos Sanchez, where there is that...
How the fuck did they get a contract about that?
No, there's the composure. There's a it, slow it down, but dangerously slow at
lazy.
Times.
Lazy. Idle. It's feckless.
Our big thing, and it was the first...
It's not being used to the Premier League.
The first 10
like
minutes of the second half kind of summed up the one thing that was... And it's been our downfall, really, throughout the season. It was this stupid decisions at stupid times in stupid positions. Yeah. Like, don't fuck about with the ball on the edge of your penalty area, which... Like, if you're going to be, that's one of the things I actually liked about Konsa. Whereas, if he knew there wasn't an option on and he was in a bit of trouble, he just thought, bollocks to this is going in the stand.
Kicking this into Digbeth Diner.
Yeah.
But going back to Mings, the main error was, I think it was on the halfway line, early doors. It was like a routine pass. I think he was passing it left,
throwing, didn't he?
And I think he gave it to the opposition or something. And sometimes he switches off a little bit. Yeah,
I think he was a bit in the one you were talking about there. He was a little bit slow to come out to Joel Linton. I think it was.
Yeah,
he underhit a pass, and you know, in the end, I think Douglas Luiz got back and sort of smothered any danger. But yeah, the one in the start of the second half when John Joe Shelby like smashed into him, and like you say, it's just, you know, Newcastle are going to come out, just don't do anything stupid.
But
it seems a bit of a common theme that, like Chris said, we are sort of shooting ourselves in the foot.
And you know, the Konsa slice kick as well was another, like,
what are you doing?
Unnecessary. Let's not shoot ourselves in the
foot.
And this
wasn't like the Liverpool
time.
Game where you're playing against the elite players who are going to pressure you. This is, you know, if you take the sting out of them for 5 or 10 minutes, you know full well they're going to have to open up. And as soon as they did, Grealish was just rubbing his hands with glee. It's like, this, we could score any amount here if we were clinical.
I don't want to have people screaming negativity, but we're just on a path to excellence here. And I think McGinn, some of his passing in the final third, it's a little bit off here and there. There was moments where, I think it was just before half time as well, where he potentially could have had gone in 3-0 up. And he had more of a blue collar game where he wasn't making any like Hollywood passes or anything. He was just kind of there. He wasn't doing anything outstanding.
I think Newcastle would have been pretty well briefed from Bruce in terms of, well, you know what Grealish is going to give you, but you need to keep an eye on McGinn.
Yeah,
in terms of what he can bring as well.
He did seem to be a bit shackled, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think the way we were playing it, because he was out on the right, I think he was just, Newcastle knew very well they had to kind of box him off and almost put two men on him, which if anything played into Grealish's hands and definitely to Hora's hands.
I think it links a bit into what we were saying earlier on about how we can be, we didn't score those goals in open play where we got into great positions in the final third, and that's, we've got a bit of overplaying about us, and we've seen this all season. Yeah. We saw it in a couple of the games where the opposition were down to 10 men. And instead of just doing the simple things right, there was a couple of interchanges, I think, where either in between Grealish and McGinn and Hourihan, that you just think someone's either got to take the shot or make the telling pass. And there was a lot of toing and froing on the edge of the Newcastle box a couple of times when you thought, well...
But they were camped.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's what it is, that they were, you know, perhaps players like McGinn, because he likes to sort of break off, I think, sometimes on the edge of the box and almost play like a loft shot, if you like, in terms of golf, into the, you know, into the far post. And he didn't have the freedom or the time to do that.
I think the other thing with him as well is that it's off the back of international break, and he pretty much is that Scotland team now.
So he carries him, doesn't he?
So he's probably had a pretty tough week compared to some other players. Yeah. So I'm willing to let him off a quiet game.
The strange thing on, you know, 70 minutes, where I wouldn't say he was blowing, but he was clearly not at his best. And by this point, Newcastle weren't going to win the game. And you've got Lansbury, who is...
We were very late with the sub again.
Ready and raring to go. And you think, this, if you're going to give someone like a Lansbury 20 minutes, this is the perfect time to do it, where he's going to get a lot of the ball and time and space to use it. That was a little bit baffling to me.
I mean, just to draw a line under this Newcastle game. I mean, just to flip it a little bit, a good Hollywood save from Heaton.
It was two great saves, actually, wasn't it? There's the one
second
half.
It was kind of straight at him, but he made sure it was good Hollywood.
Yeah, I think actually Heaton had a really, everything he had to do, he did really well. I thought his distribution was spot on.
And it's good to see him back. And I thought, I quite enjoyed watching Frederick Gilbert, because he was up for the fight. He's quite tenacious.
That was kind of like the battle of the night, wasn't it? He wasn't very competitive on the rest of the field, but that one, is it against Maxim? I forget his last name.
Yeah, because he always, I was watching Newcastle before, he's very quick, and he's always down that left flank. And
he's Gilbert, very much hit and run, isn't it?
Yeah, and Gilbert was in a real battle there, and I thought he did.
He's quite happy
well
to put his foot in, but he's a classy footballer as well. I do like that. And
and there was that moment where he did one of his bullet runs down the right, and no fucker passed
to him.
And he was like, screaming out. It was very, and that's happened a couple of times in previous games. Just unleash the Gilbert, for God's sake.
I like him.
Yeah, I do.
I really like him. And I think he's got another gear that he will. Yeah. There's a few players who are in that bracket who you can clearly see, like him and Louise, clearly Wesley, other guys. I think they've all got.
You can see why he was picked up. And see why he's
and the, you know, these are young players. I mean, you know, Wesley's 21. A lot of these players are really young.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I thought
they're development players.
I actually thought Wesley was vastly improved against Newcastle, because if anything, the team actually played to his strengths. He doesn't want it lumped up to him. You put it into his feet, and he will hold it up.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was going to say. Hold up play definitely improved.
Yeah,
there was still at the start of the second half that annoyed me more than anything was that ball, I think it was from Connor, down the line. He's got two defenders on him. He miscontrolled it, went away, and he's straight away, no attempt to try and win it back. It's arms out, referee, give me a free kick. And it never ever was. He needs to really cut that out. But overall, I think if I was rating him six out of ten,
yeah,
on Monday.
But for me, I think he's got more to give. The thing that I think is going to be really hard for him in a division where you won't get many chances. He had one big chance in the second half. But I think that's hard on him because, wind it back 6-9 months with an Abraham. It probably took Abraham 3 or 4 chances sometimes to get a goal.
Yeah.
Sometimes that was a penalty. And with Wesley, you can see what he's got. And I think that the game against Newcastle, there was good movement. He was involved. That was what I was going to say. He was far more involved than he had been on some of the games where you think quite isolated.
Yeah.
We now need to see that consistently. But I do think that's a combination of things. Him having better service and more opportunities. But actually the fact that I do think we need a second supporting player. Probably another striker.
But Grealish getting up there, getting further up and playing more as one of the attacking three will certainly help him, hopefully, in the next few games. Moving on, when we're talking about Wesley, big question is why did we let go of Scott Hogan? And it's time for the Scott Hogan Touch Count Challenge. This is something that when Ben was 10 years old, he was hoping one day when he would grow up, he would he would get to play this game. Dan Rogers, supreme champion.
You're going down, Dan.
Slowly takes he was giving it the big one on the last show.
I listened to the last show, Ben. Almost crashed my car when I heard your...
So, if you haven't heard of this Scott Hogan Touch Count Challenge before...
Where have you been?
It's unique to the show, and if anybody ever steals it, we will go around their house and burn it to the ground. and do other things. But essentially, it's first one to... Well, it used to be the best of three, but now it's a three-way. It's the first to two. We've actually got some prizes for people in the studio, thanks to Top Trumps. They didn't actually give them for the podcast. They just gave them to me in the hope that they would get some publicity.
Objective achieved.
Objective achieved, because I'm a kind soul. Instead of gifting them to family or something, I'm going to give them to these guys for turning up tonight. So there's some Top Trumps, there's a World Football Stars game, and there's like some Top Trumps quiz or something, all in shiny gold boxes.
Very cool.
That's my works Secret Santa present sorted, thanks.
Haven't won yet, Ben.
Yeah.
I was going to wrap it up for Chris Budd.
Thanks, mate.
The winner can choose first prize, and then the playoff second can choose the next one.
I was just thinking you guys probably just want to look at what we left after I picked.
This is what you could have won.
Right, let's make sure everybody gets something. So whoever wins gets first pick and going down. So the name
make
of
sure
the...
everybody gets something. What's this junior school?
Right, so the rules of the game are, it used to be the best of three if there were two players, but we'll just say the first to win two games. You have two guesses to get the number of amount of touches, whatever the question is. So it'll be either Scott Hogan or another player from another game. If nobody's got it after two guesses each, then it goes to a third and final round. And if nobody's really in the ballpark, then I will give a clue. You'll get the gist of it as we go along. And Chris is looking for...
Chris is looking at Google, I think.
Opta stats. What's he doing
here? Yeah, interesting, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to put a mirror
up
there.
Isn't that what Dan normally does, though?
Well, there is that.
Could learn to dislike Chris, bud.
Right, so... You could. We start with Scott Hogan normally. He didn't play.
Of course he didn't.
In the weekend's game, he was nowhere to be seen as Stoke managed a rare win when they beat Wigan 2-1. There was no sign of Scott Hogan, and they won. Well, it's
correlation.
There you go.
You do the maths. They then played Tuesday night, where they played the mighty Leandro Bacunas, Cardiff City, away.
Yes.
Dan Rogers looks very concerned about this for some reason.
I follow Leandro Bacunas' movements very closely as a... Championship.
Well, we're
fine. Champions League football.
I didn't even know he was at Cardiff, but he scored the winner in the 1-0 win. He scored after 11 minutes.
Oh, good.
So the question is, for the first round, Dan Rogers gets to choose if he wants to go first or second or third. How many touches in 90 minutes, he played the whole game, did Leandro Bacuna get for Cardiff?
75
from Dan Rogers. Who's going second? Let's go Ben, beginners.
I'll go 76.
76.
69.
Right, second round, Dan Rogers.
82.
55.
55 from Ben. Chris?
64.
Just to give you a bit of context, he plays now as a deep-sitting midfielder on the right-hand side. I don't know who the Cardiff manager is now, but good luck with that one.
Neil Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris. So.
Right. I'm going to give you a clue for this one. Nobody is...
I thought we only got two guesses.
No, you get a third. Ooh. Third round. Nobody is within 20.
Jesus Christ. Either he had a great game or a shocker. He's not a great player.
32.
32 from the Rodgers.
44.
4. Ben, and it's up to Chris Bird.
49.
9 from the Birds. Ben wins it.
Oh. Come on.
42. 2 off.
He played for 90 minutes and had 42 touches.
Yeah, and he's playing deep sitting midfielder, and you think they're going up 1-0 early on. Stoke would be at it.
Pissing around on his hoverboard.
I was going to say, maybe he was on his hoverboard, so you can't really... Can't really touch the ball on your hoverboard.
So Ben goes into the lead and gets to choose who goes first on this one if he wants to take that mantle. And because Stoke lost, obviously Scott Hogan was involved because he came on as a substitute.
Oh my God.
For the last 9 minutes. So I think this round's not going to last very long.
Oh God.
So how many touches does Scott Hogan have in 9 minutes? And it's up to Ben if he wants to start.
I'll go first. I'm so tempted to say zero.
It's an option.
I'll go 4.
Oh, he's got it. He wins the game.
4 touches.
Wow.
This is what I came for.
Oh.
Walks in.
What an unbelievable performance.
Like a knockout, first round knockout. Which one do you want to take?
I'll have the World Football Stars box, please.
The big one.
Yeah, thank you.
Big boy. Check this out. You can't see it because it's audio. It's a massive box. It's gold. He's a winner.
It's gold. Fantastic.
Dan Rogers can't believe it.
I can't believe it. 4 years of sitting in my own home-built igloo. We finally get a studio and I've been...
ousted.
I fly to Norway, freeze my tits off for this football club.
You boys took a hell of a beating.
You got that sample.
Right, there's still we'll just go sudden death on this one. Playoff, what is it, the third and fourth playoff? Wait, it's the second and third playoff.
We're all losers here now.
Apart from me.
Right, next opposition, Manchester United.
All right.
Tuanzebe came on for them as they had a crazy game against Sheffield United.
Okay.
Came on for 6 minutes. How many touches did he have? And I'll let the former champion, Dan Rogers, choose if he wants to go first or not.
I'll go first. 8.
Chris Budd.
7.
7. Goes to a second round.
11.
From Dan. KG. Ben's not interested. But, he's got better things to do.
Ben's got the press here. There's...
Yeah, I'm relaxing.
10.
10 from the Bird. It goes into a third and final round. Wow. No clues, really. Just he played 6 minutes. That's
14.
Dan Rogers goes higher. 14.
6?
6, he says. Well, it's a tie because it was 9. Chris Bird had 8. Huh. Dan had 10.
So we've got to share the prize.
Right in the middle.
Share top trumps.
No. We carry on.
Till the death.
Do you want to go big number or small number? Chris Bird doesn't even know what I'm talking about. Like a substitute that came on or like player that played 90 minutes?
Oh, okay.
I'll give you a choice.
90 minutes.
Fred, who played the whole 90 minutes for Manchester United, or Callum Robinson, who came on.
Keep a Villa context.
Let's do Robinson. Go with Callum.
Who came on for the last 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Callum Robinson came on the last 8 minutes as Sheffield United drew 3-3 with Manchester United. Dan Rogers.
7.
7. First guess.
5.
Bingo.
Oh, this is an outrage.
Back in the game.
Christopher, come get me.
Doesn't feel like a win, though, Dan. No, it just doesn't
feel
like a win.
No, it was a sudden death, wasn't it? You choose Chris Bird as one of these golden nuggets.
You know what? It's nearly Christmas, so I'm going to say, Dan, give it to your son.
Aww. Bit weird, Chris, that, to be honest.
Right, I can stick the knife in when I win if you want.
Well, there's two prizes there. So,
right, fuck it. I'm going to ruin Christmas for you now.
I'm going to tally my son.
I'll have the,
Chris Bud stole
there's
Christmas.
Top trumps in a big in a gold box, or there's a football top trumps quiz in a gold box.
I'll have the quiz.
There you go.
You'll need those. You need to learn the answers to those, Chris.
Yeah, and there's your...
thank you very much indeed.
Got, 500 questions.
You're the
Christmas
only one who's
Day,
got the
sorry.
Real legit top trumps. Anyway, that's enough plugging of top trumps. There's nothing in it for me. I just got a box full of top trumps, which I've just given out to the old jolly Scott Hogan touch count challenge.
Can we slag off Man United now?
I mean, we could talk about Manchester United, but we're actually going to do a separate show... we're going to do an anti-preview that we're going to put out to the mass public to get a sample of what we do on the anti-preview, which is normally only available to My Own Man Said patrons. So we'll talk about that game in that.
Right, one more thing before we go. Last week we put a call on the Mad Few hotline into Norway. It's time to warm things up a little this time. Let's give the Dubai Lions a call.
A nice little football feast from the Middle East.
Oh, very good, very good. Right, let's speak to Ryan from the Dubai Lions on the Mad Few hotline.
Hello?
Hello, is that Ryan from the Dubai Lions?
Yeah, it is. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
Hello.
So, this is the My Old Man Said podcast.
Hello there.
How we doing?
How's it going? Hi, guys. Yeah, all good.
We thought we would put a call in since it's your fifth anniversary. I don't know if you remember the X-Men films with, like, Patrick Stewart, where he goes into that room and puts that helmet on and he can connect with all the... I was going to say mutants around the world, but our equivalent is connecting to all the villains around the world.
It's the global Mad View. Yeah, Mad View.
Don't take that as an insult, the mutants reference.
And I did.
Earlier on in the month, early in November, I think it was against Liverpool, you had your fifth anniversary. How did that go down?
Yeah, it was a great time. We invited the lovely Ian Taylor and Mr. Sean Teal. And Sean Till's wife Carol came as well. They were a great crack. It was good to have them on board and to celebrate what has been a roller coaster of 5 years as Aston Villa fans and as a supporters club.
If you listen to this podcast and you listen to the Ron Atkinson interview, he made a little reference to Sean Till's wife. I interviewed Sean Teal a few years ago and. It was obviously a bit of beef between him and Ron. And then when I asked Ron about it, Ron said, he was all right, old Teely. He was all right. His wife was a bit of a pain in the ass. but I hear that she was good fun over in Dubai.
Yeah, they were. Everyone was great fun. And they really got stuck into the weekend. We interviewed both of them as well on a stage in a hotel in Dubai. And, yeah, there was a few things said about Big Ron. So I'll leave Sean to embellish on that if anyone meets him next. Let's just say he didn't hold back, and it was an interesting interview. About 80 or so Dubai Lions packed into a room to listen to what the two chaps had to say, and a few chip-ins from Carol, Sean's wife, as well. So yeah, we had a good start to the weekend, and then it went on from there. We pushed the boat out and made the most of it.
So what did you do, like the Liverpool game and then like the Q&A's all in one day, and then did other stuff, or you know what did you get up to over the weekend?
No, we did a Friday morning or early afternoon interview with the two chaps, and then went down to a brunch as you do in this region to partake in a few beverages and enjoy the evening, and then watched the game the next day with the guys. Did a raffle and had the guys join us for the Liverpool game, which was unfortunately a slow end to. Or poor end to what was a really fun weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we held out and won 1-0, it would have been a classic weekend, if it wasn't already. Who lasted the longest out of Tails and Mr. Teal in a drinking sense?
Well, I was one of the last to leave on the Friday after the brunch. I was one of the last to leave the pub. And I left Ian Taylor there. He was still behind... chatting to a last of the few locals.
Early hours job.
He's,
how did it all get started in Dubai? Obviously, 5 years. Five years ago, it's not as if we're an easy sell as a club.
I'm sure you were happy to be over there, weren't you? We're not over here watching it in person.
Yeah, it was easier to kind of hide from what was happening a little bit. But the club was started up by Mark Forrester. He sat in a pub on his own. Actually, not on his own. There was a few other supporters clubs in the pub that he went to. Got invited by the Baggies fans to come and sit with them. And then sat down in the corner of a pub and decided to try and flush out some more Villa fans. So there was Rangers fans in there. There was West Brom fans, Crystal Palace fans. There was a few other supporters clubs there. So we thought we'd try and build on that. In 2014, and managed to start flushing people out from Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, a few other places.
So how do you go from 1 to 80? Have you converted anybody, any of the locals into Villa fans while you've been over there?
Not really locals. We've got a few drop-ins from the kind of local Emirati community, but we actually have Saudi royalty who come regular, who are big Villa fans. So
they're
our sad family. They have Prince Abdulaziz Al Saud, who won't mind me mentioning him. Yeah. He pops in. He's a big Aston Villa fan. He pops in on a regular basis and comes and watches games with us. Obviously, doesn't partake in some of the rituals that take part, but he does sit with us and enjoy the games and gets well involved. He's clearly very passionate and a top guy to boot.
Has he been over to Villa Park at all recently?
Yeah, I think he does. I think he visits on occasion. He's got businesses in Birmingham that he runs, so he's over there quite regularly. And he's really part of the Villa fan base from afar.
Good stuff. So, how are the guys out there seeing the season so far back in the Premier League? Are you still buoyant and are you confident for the rest of the season?
Yeah, we are. I think as a Dubai Lions, we started in 2014 when things probably weren't as rosy as they are now. So we've seen things take a step for the better, and we're a pretty positive bunch in that regard. So yeah, we enjoy the games, we enjoy meeting up, even if it's a midnight kickoff here, which it was against Newcastle. We get a good turnout, and we've enjoyed seeing the progress of the team, from afar. But we've enjoyed watching how they come on. So a few results that were painful. The Arsenal one was a bit of a shocker, and we didn't enjoy that one too much. But in general, we're quite pleased with how the team's panning out. I saw a bit of a change during the Newcastle game, where we kind of controlled the game a bit better than we have done through the last few weeks. We took our foot off the gas a little bit in terms of the pace and the speed in the first half, and I just thought we controlled the game a lot better. So I think the game management's improving, each player's improving, and yeah, we're pretty positive out here. We want to see a few more improvements.
What do you think we need in January, just in a nutshell?
I think it's pretty obvious we need a striker. I think Wesley. He's a bit of Marmite at the moment amongst the Villa fans and even amongst the Dubai Lions here. We're 130 registered full-time Dubai Lions now, largest overseas supporters club outside the British Isles. And it's probably 50-50.
You're on the hard sell here. You're on the hard sell.
Keep talking. I'm quite interested. What are the terms of joining? And considering Brexit, I may need to relocate the villaunderground.com.
Oh, you're more than merrier. You're more than welcome. Get yourself registered. Get over here. It's something to behold.
I consider that a visa.
We can get that sorted. Don't worry, you've got contact.
Three-year stint, Dan. It's tax-free.
Yeah, because we need a striker in the window. I think that would really help us out. Maybe another winger, just to add another option. Yeah. And I think if we add that, we'll be fine.
So in terms of just the logistics of watching games, when's a 3 o'clock Saturday game for you? What time is it locally?
At the moment, it's a 7 p.m., which is a good time.
That's pretty good.
The games like the Newcastle game is a midnight kickoff, which is always interesting on a school night. But we get good turnouts even at those times.
Yeah, well, that's not too bad. I mean, I used to live in Australia for a couple of years, and that was a nightmare. You'd be like watching games at 4 a.m. and having beers at 6 a.m. and stuff.
He still
like
does
that
now, by the way. I mean,
well, we do wake up a few workday mornings and think, oh, bollocks, have done it again. We've had a few drinks after the game and we're going to work with sore heads, particularly when Ron Atkinson came over. I remember at some point in the night, drunkenly giving him my business card, he called me the next morning. And my head
Whoops.
Which was he trying to sign you?
he was trying to score some cheap hotels, we come through the switchboard and Maria from Guest Services says, Ryan, I've got Mr. Ron Atkinson on the line, so I put him through, and I'm like, what? so some heavy mornings in Dubai, that's for sure.
How is English football in general, or the Premier League, is there a big following just because of the expats out there?
Yeah, there is. There's a massive kind of supporters club community. And a lot of the bars and pubs in Dubai are scrambling to get them in. The pub that we've come to now, which is great, right in the centre of the city, they love our business that we give to them, like 2 or 3 in the morning. We're still buying drinks, and that really kind of boosts their business. So there's a lot of pubs and clubs scrambling for the walls. They've got a good club. They come watch the games with us when we play them, and they've got a great pub that they were poached to go to. So yeah, there's a really big community of supporters clubs. Obviously the Liverpool's, Man City's and Man United's are pretty hefty here. There's a few other ones, Wolves I've mentioned, Sheffield Wednesday, Crystal Palace, even Southampton, that have some really great places to watch games, and if anyone's coming over, I'd encourage them to come and join us anyway.
Yeah, so just quickly, how do people get in touch with you if they're coming over to Dubai?
We're one of the only supporters clubs with every single channel. all the social media networks, right, and DubaiLions.com. So that's how you'll find more information about us. Rose and Crown, Alhaftor City, is where we watch the games, and we're on the upper tier of there and get a good turnout every week, and generally good banter and good rituals. And as we always say, we're easy company.
I think I've sent a couple of people your way in the past, but before we say goodbye, just a quick prediction for the United game. What are you thinking?
I think we've got a bit of newfound confidence. I think we can probably nick a 1-0 win. I think we've played well in the last game. I don't think Man United are really too hot at the moment. So I think we could probably score a win.
Too much sunshine in Dubai for my liking.
Gone to the head.
Where we are, it's looking like a 5-0 to United. I don't know. It's the last time we beat him at Old Trafford was the old Gabby goal. I was there, actually, at the 1-0, wasn't it? Smash and grab.
That was a 1-0. I think we could do the same. I think we've got the players to challenge them on the top end.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've only got to see how we've performed against the likes of Spurs and Liverpool for long periods to suggest that we can actually, if we finish the job off for a change, we could actually beat them on their patch. Anyway, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Ryan, and thank you very much for joining us tonight. I think it's past midnight where you are, so thanks very much, and hopefully see you in the flesh either in Villa Park or in Dubai, preferably.
Yeah, thanks, chaps. I'll be there at Christmas, so I'll catch up with you guys then.
Yeah, take care out there.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, champ. See ya. Bye.
All right. Thanks again to Ryan from the Dubai Lions. And we will be putting in another Mad Few hotline call in the next week as well. No idea where we'll end up, but that's part of the excitement. So thanks as always for listening. If you want to become a patron, please go to the myomansaid.com website and check out the patron link to get access to bonus episodes and to support the show. Also, as I said earlier on, it's Black Friday, so do check out the shop option on the website, because all the updated codes to save yourself money if you're buying Aston Villa presents are on there. Subscribe to the show on Spotify, leave a review on iTunes if you listen there, and also obviously follow. And until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Right, yeah, it hasn't recorded what we've just done.
Okay, start again.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
From the top.
Hold on a minute.
Make sure you mention Sean Teal's wife's crack again. That was good.
Right, hold on.
She won't mind at all.
Let's just ring and take it from the top.
Sorry, but you've got to laugh at that.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.